Hour number one is industry chatter, as we do at 1 o'clock every Thursday. My guest today is Ted Davies of Unisys, in studio with me. It's great to see you. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Francis.
Happy to do it. Why don't we start with the elevator speech on Unisys and what you provide for the government? I know a lot of people, like my friend Tom Temin, who I talked to about you being on the show this morning, first thought out of his mouth was mainframe, and certainly that was a long time ago. So talk about where you are today.
Sure. I like to joke with folks often that this is really not your father's Unisys. The predecessor companies to Unisys have been around for over 100 years. You look at companies like Remington and Rand and Sperry and Burroughs, big mainframe companies, and really history and a heritage around innovation from all those organizations. Many folks have heard about the ENIAC computer that was used by the Army in the 1940s. The UNIVAC computers that were used by the Bureau of the Census, as well as the IRS, even all the way back to around 1950. Those are all from the predecessor companies to Unisys. Those companies were 95% technology, hardware, and very small amount of services. Unisys today is almost diametrically opposed to that. We still have a piece of hardware that we still operate and maintain, and really is an important part of our business, deployed in many federal agencies as well as commercial clients around the world. But the vast majority of what we do today is IT services, IT solutions. So a pretty dramatic evolution of the company over the last 15 years. We're about a $4.5 billion company in over 100 countries around the world. And our federal business located here in Washington is about 20% of that.
Mm-hmm.
So we do work in the federal marketplace on many, many federal agencies. Our largest clients are Customs and Border Protection, Department of Agriculture, Department of Justice, Department of Treasury, a number of defense organizations like DISA and Army, Navy, and Air Force. So we're all over the place providing both services and technology.
When I think of Unisys most recently, the work that jumps out at me is the move to the cloud at the General Services Administration, the email move there. Talk about how that developed and where you see that going.
Sure. I think it's a really fascinating opportunity for both GSA and for Unisys, as well as for Google, who's our partner in this endeavor. And I think what's very interesting is this is not just the implementation of an email system. I mean, we've done that before. We did it for TSA. We did it for HHS. But what GSA is trying to accomplish is really transform their enterprise and transform it into a more collaborative enterprise. And so when they looked at potential solutions, a lot of good solutions out there, they really did like the solution we proposed around Google. And I think one of the reasons that they liked Unisys as the lead on this engagement is because we understand the GSA enterprise and we understand where they're trying to go. But they want to use this move to the cloud. It's been well advertised that this will save them money, which is important in today's environment. But it also provides them a platform to better integrate and share information across there. It's a very geographically diverse organization. And so it's a way for them to take 15,000 plus people and make them work together in a better way. It gives them that platform to do that.
Yeah. We were talking before we went on the air about cloud computing and how we've seen it kind of evolve. If we would have had this conversation 2 or 3 years ago about cloud, it would have been this kind of amorphous monolith where there was one idea of what cloud computing was. We've seen that kind of splinter. There are a bunch of different flavors of it for different applications and so on. How are the agencies doing as they come to you and ask you about potential cloud solutions? How are they doing overall at understanding what all the different possibilities are, what all the different, I guess, compartments are that are in this market now?
Well, I think agencies understand it. You know, when you talk to folks, I think a year ago, there was still a lot of buzz around the word cloud, and it was being used pretty synonymously with earlier terms around virtualization and consolidation. But I think today people are more and more understanding the benefits they can get from moving to a cloud environment. And certainly with the recent 25-point plan that Vivek Kundra put out, and one of them being a cloud-first strategy, people are really getting their heads around it. Now it's really about how do I do it? And so the work that we're doing today really up front is around advice on how to make the journey. You know, what's appropriate to put in the cloud? What is going to be more difficult to get there? What are the different strategies to make it happen? What should be done in a public cloud? What can be done in a private cloud? Where can you take advantage of prepackaged providers, things like the Google and others, And so it's really sort of an early part of the implementation, whereas a year ago, it was kind of the still talking about it stage.
I want to talk more about cloud, but you mentioned the prepackaging thing. A lot of agencies have become more receptive to using things. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and he said agencies are becoming less vain. They don't feel the need to have everything custom designed particularly for them. What's driving it? Is that only money, or are there some project management issues involved there too, do you think?
I think it's a number of things. A big piece around this point, what I'll call reuse, which is something that we at Unisys are really pushing hard. Why recreate the wheel when you can utilize what's already been developed? In fact, we had a major launch announced the other day around a modernization platform for services, for applications. And, you know, what we really see is, A, there's a cost savings in there, certainly. But, B, there's a schedule savings. It's really a lot quicker to take things that have already been prepackaged and work to get them adapted and implemented than it is to start from scratch. So I think that that's a real big big driver in this.
All right, back to the cloud. We talked about a little bit about the different flavors, so to speak, of cloud, and you made me feel good that agencies are understanding all the differences and the choices that they have. How do some of those break down? What are some of the good applications that can go to a public cloud, and how secure are the public clouds? What are some that maybe are more appropriate for a private cloud, and maybe what's not quite ready for prime time yet?
Yeah. I think a lot of it has to do with the data you're dealing with, and I think the reluctance from agencies to move to a public cloud is where they have data they don't want to have get outside their firewalls. So I think where you find generic data, a little more generic data, like email, is being moved out there quicker. Where you have mission-critical applications, those will probably move into the private cloud environment, but probably will not get outside. And where there's proprietary data, where there's, you know, you look at an organization like the VA with a lot of important data, they're going to be slower to get outside their firewalls, I think.
Is the decision about what to do only data-driven, or maybe I should say the quality and type of the data, or are there other considerations too, the applications that are involved, or any of those kinds of things?
I think there's complexity in migrating applications, where applications have been built on the front end to be able to be done from a web-based perspective. Then I think that that's probably easier to do. Where you've got complex applications that were built in earlier environments, that's a lot more difficult.
What does the effect of trying to transition from a legacy system to where you have a whole bunch of hardware that's either on-site or within essentially the property of the agency to this kind of a service-oriented environment? What's that like? I can imagine that'd be pretty challenging just thinking about mindset of I'm going to have to do things dramatically differently when this is done.
Yeah, I guess I'd answer that in two different views. The first one is from a mindset perspective where you have forward-leaning thinkers and organizations. They can get their heads around what the benefits are. And at the end of the day, if it's done pretty well, it's pretty transparent to the end users, the folks that are getting access to the systems and utilizing the data. So that's not hard. There is a challenge I think many agencies have around capital expenditures. And in some cases, they have bought big infrastructures, or contractors have bought big infrastructures. And so being able to kind of de-invest and decouple from an established vendor and established solution, sometimes the contractual details are as challenging as the technical details.
You used two words there that I want to touch on when we come back from the break. My guest is Ted Davies. He's president of Federal Systems at Unisys. My guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose, and more conversation about the people who really use this stuff in just a moment.
Persistent problem facing all government agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. there is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. Go to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's energyrecoveryonline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
Lots of cybersecurity tools are out there. What's their real purpose? Here's Tom Schankweiler, Chief Information Security Officer in the Health and Human Services Secretary's Office.
I was not so much worried about the tools per se as I was about the knowledge I could get. So I wasn't really vendor specific. I was more about output specific and how those different technologies could come together. A key component was bringing together someone that could help architect these different solutions.
To hear the entire show, log on to Federal News. Radio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security. Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Thanks to more powerful and reliable supercomputers, NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, is now using enhanced weather and marine forecast models for the Great Lakes region. That means that forecasts can be extended from 36 to 60 hours into the future to better serve mariners, the shipping industry, emergency responders, water resource managers, and others. The Great Lakes Operational Forecast System is now running on the supercomputers. They operate around the clock, offering a more reliable computing framework to generate Great Lakes forecast models and ultimately producing more timely forecasts. It also marks a first step toward linking NOAA's environmental modeling efforts with state-of-the-art technology that paves the way for a more seamless way to deliver forecasts.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. You know the Sony PlayStation, right? Well, how many PlayStation video gaming consoles would it take to create the power of a supercomputer? We'll talk to Defense Department engineers who've done it. We'll find out how and why. And the SBA, they've redesigned their website. They're looking to provide information and build community. We'll find out how they're doing that this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Ted Davies of Unisys, my guest on Industry Chatter today. We were talking about the cloud before the break and some of the other solutions that your company offers and so on. And I mentioned there are two words that you said in the last thought that you were sharing with us that I think get overlooked a lot in these conversations. Those two words are end users, the people who actually are meeting the mission of the agency, getting the person the check they need, or catching the bad guy, or whatever the mission of the agency is. Are you seeing more or less or the same amount or the right amount of attention being paid to the end user? I need to make sure this system does X, Y, Z, not because I have to meet this initiative or because OMB says so, but because my team of people that is doing whatever needs to be able to do whatever better.
Well, I'm glad, Francis, we're touching on the end user and the people that are performing the mission of the agencies. I do get the opportunity to be out and meeting with clients and meeting with our team. I was actually doing some of that this morning. And what really comes back is how passionate and how focused government officials are on meeting the mission of their agency. And I'm really impressed with that. I think that regardless of the agency, people really see their purpose as fulfilling their mission. And so the IT departments, and most of them are pretty good at this, recognize that they're there to support the mission of the organization. And I see that doing nothing but increasing. And I feel real happy when I talk to clients. And one of the best things that I hear is how passionate about their mission our people are at Unisys. So I think that that's critical that the IT departments and the people that support them are focusing on those folks.
The discussion that's revolved around the collaborative tools that are becoming really popular, not just in government but all over the place, I think we're kind of a microcosm of the broader IT discussion that's been going on, which is in the beginning – the thought was, we need to use these. Well, why? Because everybody's doing it. Well, what are you going to do? Well, we're going to use Facebook or whatever. Mm-hmm. The same thing, I think, is maybe started a little bit at the beginning of cloud computing. Mm-hmm. We should be in the cloud. Why? Because everybody's in the cloud. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily able to articulate why it's a benefit to the end user. And so it's a good thing, I think, that people are focused, that the IT shops are continuing to stay as focused on that as they are.
Yeah, they are. And I think with a lot of the IT initiatives today are really about making it easier for people to do their jobs. Mm-hmm. You look at the move to mobile computing. You look at the implementation of social networking, even in government and the private sector. These are tools and approaches that people use in their daily life to be more personally effective and productive outside of the office. And now you see in agencies and organizations looking to adapt them to perform their mission in a better way. So I think it's all coming. The consumerization of IT, where people want to bring devices in from home and be able to plug them in. I do it at Unisys. Our clients are doing it. It's just going to provide a better productivity and effectiveness of an entire workforce.
Yeah, you brought your iPad with you today, and I have been going crazy with glee reading all of the news out of CES in Las Vegas about all of the cool Android tablets that are coming down the pike. I'm happen to be an Android fan, and have gone really bananas over my Droid phone. But the proliferation of those devices, the heartburn seems to be caused by the idea of, I got to make sure that my network is secure, that people can – somebody brings in his iPad and purely innocently does something he shouldn't do, and somebody can all of a sudden get access to stuff they shouldn't. How easy or hard is that now to prevent, and how easy or hard will it continue to be, do you think?
Well, I think it's going to get – more and more secure. You know, these devices are brand new. iPads are, even iPhones are only 4 years old. Mm-hmm. Droid phones are a couple years old. So this technology is relatively new, and I think security is going to get better and better for all these devices. I would say I utilize this comfortably within the Unisys ecosystem, and we have mechanisms for protection around digital certifications. But you touched on something in what you said earlier, that people have the opportunity to make stupid decisions. Mm-hmm. You know, they can go to websites they shouldn't go to. They can download attachments and open attachments they shouldn't. And so a lot of the security provisions that you have to have is not just technology. You can technology yourself to death, but you have folks that are not well trained or not following process and procedure. You're going to still get into trouble, whether it's on their desktop or laptop, or whether it's on a tablet or a phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a combination of measures around security that you have to put in place.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that human element of network security and cybersecurity when we come back from the break on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Ted Davies, the president of Federal Systems for Unisys, my guest, and we'll be back in a moment on In Depth. A reminder, in hour number two of the program, we're going to talk to James Ledbetter, who's author of the book Unwarranted Influence, Dwight D. Eisenhower and the Military-Industrial Complex. That's the second hour on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm Stephanie Shelton, CNBC Radio. Stocks remain mixed. The Dow is down 20 and the Nasdaq's up 2. Crude oil prices holding under $92 a barrel at this moment. Federal regulators are limiting speculative trading of commodities like oil and food products. The new rule is open to public comment. Critics are saying that such trading drives up prices for consumers. Wholesale prices, led by food and energy costs, spiked over 1% last month. It's the most in a year. And initial applications for jobless benefits rose as well to a six-month high. AIG hosting a stream of investment banking CEOs today. The insurance firm is preparing for a secondary stock offering, which will allow it to pay off the federal bailout funds. But taxpayers will end up with 92% of the common stock until it's sold off. And a federal judge has approved a $7 billion settlement with the Picower estate for victims of convicted Ponzi schemer Bernard Madoff. I'm Stephanie Shelton, CNBC Radio.
I'm all about the three S's: stock up, save money, and simplify.
Member Renee Chevalier on the Sam's Club January Stock Up event.
I stock up now and save big on the basics we use all the time. Detergent, paper towels.
Health and beauty products, too. Save over retail on brands like Tide, Bounty, and Colgate. And sample all the Sam's Club values and benefits January 12th through 25th with no membership required.
Now that's simple.
Not a member? Join at Sam's Club or samsclub.com. Sam's Club. Savings made simple.
Acura cars and SUVs are engineered to amaze. They're engineered to perform. But most of all, they're engineered to last, which makes buying a certified pre-owned Acura an easy decision. And during the Engineered to Last sales event, you'll find exceptional offers on every certified pre-owned Acura, including 0.9% APR for well-qualified customers. Visit your local Acura dealer or Acura.com today. Offer ends January 31st, 2011. See dealer for details.
This was revealed in December 1995. Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Dell, and AVU Technologies. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
If you want great college hoops on your schedule and with a great price, now is the time to purchase your Colonials ticket packs. Visit gwsports.com and click tickets to learn about the great package options for your wallet and your schedule. Get seats for you, your friends, and your family in the renovated Charles E. Smith Center and watch what the Express calls D.C.'s best college team. Visit gwsports.com or call 202-994-6050 for your ticket packages today. Your tickets, your team, your GW basketball.
I'm Police Officer Sergeant Goodwin. I've been looking into a report of thieves operating in this area. We have now located their hideout, and it's at your local bank. The banks are robbing you blind.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. He's right. If you've got a mortgage, your bank is stealing from you, because a typical monthly mortgage payment is 90% or more interest, and over the life of a 30-year mortgage, that can cost you a fortune. It should be illegal. But there's a proven way to eliminate your mortgage and all your other debts using just the money you already make. No credit card debt, no car payment, no mortgage. To prove it, let me send you a copy of my powerful Live Debt-Free CD. Call 1-800-600-1195. Stop getting robbed of your money and future. Get my powerful Live Debt-Free CD. Call 1-800-600-1195. For your free copy of my Live Debt-Free CD, call 1-800-600-1195.
Hi, I'm Denise Ballou of the FBI. The case was revealed in December 1995. Operation Senior Sentinel targeted illegal boiler rooms and telemarketing fraud.
The case was hugely significant in that it's one of the few, if not only, instances I can think of where an entire crime problem was basically wiped out by very focused, dramatic investigation.
Keith Slaughter is special agent in charge of FBI San Diego. Formerly in Miami, he initiated the undercover operation that evolved into Senior Sentinel.
These were telemarketers who were really, really bad individuals who were promising big prizes and a lot of different things, preying on customers, especially the elderly.
Many were conned into losing their life savings, but the tables were turned.
Instead of using undercover agents in those cases, we used a combination of retired agents and retired citizens affiliated with the AARP to pose as victims.
Ultimately, about 1,200 arrests and hundreds of convictions. I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Ted Davies of Unisys is my guest on industry chatter today, and we're talking a little bit about end users in the last segment, Ted. And when it comes to end users, the thing that we have to remember, as you and I were talking about during the break, is that those end users are human beings. We talk about a lot of these processes and technologies and so on in pretty cold, pretty stark terms, and almost as though those end users are automatons, and they're not. I don't know what possesses someone who's in the Middle East in a war zone or very close to a war zone to take a thumb drive he's never seen before and stick it in the DOD network, but it happens. Mm-hmm. And bad things happen as a result. How do we manage those expectations, and how do we put people in the places where they're most likely to I don't want to say succeed, I guess, because that implies that some of them are failing, and that's not entirely fair either, but I think you get where I'm going with that.
Well, it depends if you're talking about end users or you're talking about major projects or programs.
Well, both. I think both are fair.
I think everything boils down to people, process, and technologies. Mm-hmm. And so we've talked a little bit about some of the technologies that are evolving, and that train is going to continue to move very, very fast, as it has over the last 20-plus years. Processes are pretty well formulated, and I think, for instance, in the 25-point plan that was released back in December, there was a lot of discussion leading up to that around, do we need to change policies, do we need to rewrite laws and regulations, things like that. I think that Vivek and others came up with, you know, I think we have most of what we need in place. What we really need to have is better governance around people, mm-hmm. and making sure that we have the right folks running projects, the right skilled workforce in the contracting world, right definition of architecture, things like that. A lot of it comes back to putting the right people in the right places to maximize their effectiveness.
Mm-hmm. That's a challenge for you and companies that are in the same spot as you are, though, because in some cases, especially when it comes to cybersecurity people, mm-hmm. you're competing for the same people that your customers want to hire, yep. to do the same things for them that you want to either do for you, yep. or to do for them on behalf of you. So yep. this is kind of a dynamic that's not that I don't know if there's a parallel for it in the private sector.
Well, there is a parallel. You touch on something that's really important, and that is the right skilled resources, particularly mm-hmm. in hot areas like cybersecurity. It's really there's a heavy demand for those types of folks, and so both government and industry are competing for them. I sometimes refer to it as a hyper-competitive labor market mm-hmm. here in the Washington, D.C. area, and it's remained that way for talented folks. I think the best thing that we all need to do as leaders in organizations, whether it's government or private sector, is make sure that we're providing the right career path for folks, and we're giving them the right opportunities for growth and supporting their development, whether it's through training or other programs. And we spend a lot of time in Unisys trying to make sure that we do that. And I know the government is starting to move towards a professional program for IT program managers, as an example, mm-hmm. Which I think is going to be really important as you allow folks to get better skills, see a career path for them in the organization that they're in, but also have the opportunity to move between agencies and move between jobs. That's really important as well, because improving the workforce, both on the government side and certainly on the contractor side, is the way this is all going to work out in a good way.
The professionalization and the career track that you talk about of the IT world, I think, has really it strikes me that it's been quicker in government than it's been in the mm-hmm. private sector. I don't know if that's the experience that you've had or not.
I'm not sure I'd say that. Maybe there's some agencies that are ahead of others, and mm-hmm. there's some companies that are ahead of others. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that within Unisys, about 2 years ago, we recognized that we needed to better equip some of our managers. And so we built some new training courses to help them with the full skill set that they needed to both manage complex projects, but also manage groups of people and to be able to move their organization forward. So I think there's many companies that have embraced this, over the last few years particularly. Mm-hmm. And it's uneven. It's uneven in industry, and it's uneven in government as well.
Yeah. Let's tie together a couple of these strands. Let's tie together the workforce strand and the professionalization strand and the your relationship to the government and so on. When it comes to actually dealing with the agencies mm-hmm. and the acquisition people who are acquiring your services and goods on behalf of the end users that we've talked about, How is all of that fitting together? Is it or is it getting better for the agencies to supply their end users with what they need? Are they being well served by the acquisition workforces that are in place at the agencies and so forth?
I would say it's a challenging environment. That's probably the way to look at it today. There's a lot of pressure on everybody to get things done faster, cheaper, better. And I would also suggest, and this is through lots of conversations with industry and CIOs as well as with folks at OMB, that it has gotten a little bit adversarial at times. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a definite recognition that we want to work more collaboratively to get things done. I think it's been a challenging environment. I think the fiscal environment that we're in right now is making it even more challenging. And I think both government and industry have to decide that we're going to work together to solve problems. I think there's some things, good dialogue happening to move in that direction.
I get a sense from what Martha Johnson and Dan Gordon talk about on a regular basis, mm-hmm. though, that they do recognize that has been, they see the same thing that you see and are saying, we're going to try to
ship
here.
I had the opportunity to meet with Dan before Christmas and actually met with Martha recently as part of our Google project. But, you know, Dan definitely recognized this as a challenge. And when you looked at the 25-point plan that came out, I think it was number 24. We were joking offline about 25 is a big number to remember. But
it's a big number.
I was looking at it the other night, and I think number 24 is something called his MythBuster program,
mm-hmm.
where he wants to get out into the agencies and make sure they understand what they can and can't do, because I think there's some local myth that happens with contracting officers that, you know, we have to be very rigid and strict, when in fact the laws don't necessarily require that. And so I think that we've it's like a pendulum, and it's kind of erred over on one side.
Mm-hmm.
And he recognizes, and Martha does as well, that we've got to get to a more collaborative environment while following all the laws and regulations.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of good rules that are in place, so we don't want to violate anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I think more open dialogue early in the process is going to be good for everybody.
Every scholar of the FAR that I have ever talked to says there's nothing that says that if I'm the agency and you're the vendor, I can't talk to you. I just have to be judicious about making sure that I'm talking to everybody.
Absolutely.
That would potentially be interested in a particular line of business or contract or project or whatever.
Absolutely.
I think it's encouraging to see that the agencies now are starting to understand that's a myth and get what Dan and Martha are talking about.
Yep. I think this will be an evolution, but it'll be positive for everybody.
Ted Davies is my guest. He is the president of Federal Systems at Unisys on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose, and more industry chatter in just a moment.
A persistent problem facing all government agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. There is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. Go to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's energyrecoveryonline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
It's not every day that a Washington Monument celebrates a major milestone, but this year, the University of the District of Columbia is marking its 160th anniversary. Since 1851, they've made academic and professional dreams come true for thousands of ambitious Washingtonians. Join them as they commemorate 160 years of scholarship and achievement with a series of events, starting with a birthday gala January 29th. Learn more at udc.edu/160.
Newsmakers on the Dora Beck Insight.
Insider.
Tom Trabucco, Director of External Affairs at the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board.
Somebody noticed a change in their account balance that didn't reflect contributions or earnings. So what we did is activated our core at the call centers to give them information for any of these folks to tell them of our plan to get this right. We'll notify all affected participants, offer to take the funds back, reverse the transaction, and make them whole.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/DoraBeckInsider. Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Industry Chatter today, Ted Davies from Unisys. And you have brought your mobile device. You have an iPad there. I mentioned that I got a Droid phone not too long ago. It's the first mobile device that I've had. My son has had an iPod Touch for a while, and that's when I first really understood the implications that, not necessarily for the enterprise at that time, although I've come to understand it a little better. You and I were just talking off the air that I think when we look back in 5 or 10 years at the effect that mobile computing has had on the enterprise, it will make the 5 years from 05 to now or 06 to now look, you said tame by comparison, and I think you're exactly right. What do you think the implications are, particularly in government, for the mobile computing revolution that a lot of people think is right around the corner or is in the process now?
Well, we talked earlier about mission focus, and it's something that every agency has a big portion of its workforce not sitting in buildings right now. And if you look at virtually any agency, whether it's agriculture, whether it's food inspectors, whether it's customs agents, whether it's people in the military deployed, you know, the ability to connect with them, not just, you know, think about the world, you know, 10 or 15 years ago before cell phones were as, you know, predominant as they are today, trying to connect with a mobile workforce was difficult. They had to go to a payphone and check in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over the last 10 years and 15 years, certainly it's cell phones are ubiquitous and everybody's got them and they can connect immediately via the cell phone. And now you're in a world where they can check their emails from anywhere in the world. And you think about the productivity enhancements that that provides and the ability for them to better perform their jobs. It's just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a logical step to look at bigger and greater uses where they can get at the critical applications that they need to use every day. Rather than taking notes on a pad of paper and then going back and typing into a keyboard that night, you know, you can have inspectors going right in online right away.
Mm-hmm.
The productivity opportunity is just way too big to not take place.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still concern over some security issues.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go next, because the idea of having, you know, 5,000 inspectors doing whatever they're inspecting with iPads or tablet, whatever tablet it is, is exciting on the one hand, and on the other hand, it must be terrifying to IT and IS people.
I think the CISOs are very nervous, and rightfully so. I don't think that every security vulnerability has been addressed yet, but there's a lot of progress being made, and I think that over the next year or so, you're going to see wider spread adoption of these devices.
I've quoted this study that Goldman Sachs put out in December about 5,000 times since it came out, that over they're estimating a third of desktop PCs that will be replaced entirely with mobile devices, that mobile devices, tablets are becoming not add-ons to networks and to people's personal arsenals.
Sure, when you think about the basic functionality that most office workers need, most professionals that work behind desks or at computers, you know, the basic functionalities around communications medium for sure, but getting access to Word documents and Excel spreadsheets and PowerPoint presentations and the like, that's really what most folks are really needing to deal with every single day. So you're going to take a segment of that population pretty quickly and move them there.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously are always going to have much more heavy users that are going to always need better and more powerful laptops and desktops, but some portion can move to tablets pretty quick, I think.
And even the power that we're seeing on some of these machines, some of the stuff I was reading out of what's being shown at CES out in Las Vegas, they're not wimpy.
Oh, that's true.
They're pretty robust systems, the operating systems and the capabilities of the apps themselves.
It's certainly it's a very fascinating market to watch. When you think about the power of competition, just when one company seems to run way ahead, Apple obviously in the tablet area is probably noted as the industry leader. But you have other devices. You look at the CES show; other devices are going to come fast. And 2 years from now, you don't know what the landscape is going to be.
Yeah.
You look where the iPhone was 4 years ago when it first launched; it was dominant.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Droid phones came out, and they've leaped up. And now Apple's going to Verizon. And so I think the competitive nature of the marketplace and the competition in our economy is just a wonderful thing for productivity enhancements that we're going to see.
What other things should IT pros in government be thinking about when it comes to mobile computing? Is there anything on the horizon or kind of laying in the weeds that hasn't really been considered or talked about that much that you think?
I still think that the opportunity for collaboration is great. So right now with mobile devices, it's still a two-way, you know, I throw something out, I pull email out, or I write an email, I send it. So it's kind of in and out. When you look at the opportunity for collaboration, where you can do real-time blogs and posting things and have people jointly editing documents and things like that, the opportunity to collaborate from a remote device will probably be more important when you're done.
Yeah. I feel the same way about mobile computing in the enterprise that I feel kind of about social media tools. I'm not sure that the long-term benefit to the agencies is going to be in the agency to citizen platform so much. Certainly there will be some, but I think it's more going to be more internal where people using collaborative tools are going to be able to meet the mission more effectively by using them that way than actually directly communicating or connecting with the citizen or the person they're supposed to work with.
I would agree with that there's a huge benefit within the government for collaboration within an agency or cross agency. I'd like to think and I expect that over time, rather than a citizen having to interface with three or four different agencies, that one day in the not-too-distant future, this will facilitate a single entry into the government. And it'll make it a lot easier rather than having to duplicative interfaces with multiple agencies.
Yeah. Ted Davies of Unisys, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Wrap up our conversation in just a few moments and get you set for hour number two of the program when we come back.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
Can cybersecurity be baked into new applications as they're being developed? Here's Tom Schankweiler, Chief Information Security Officer in the Health and Human Services Secretary's Office.
It is a challenge. I think what we're finding more and more is security is kind of baked into the cycle development process for systems. So there's regular routine checks that go in through the development lifecycle of an application.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arink.
The U.S. military is playing a significant role in the treatment of Arizona Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. Dr. James Eklund, a retired Army colonel who served in Iraq, and U.S. Colonel Jeffrey Ling, interim chair of the Uniformed Services University of Health Sciences, were sent to Tucson to help out. Both of them have developed extraordinary expertise in treating some of the most difficult and delicate trauma cases. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine the size of an aircraft hangar that can hold four C-130 military aircraft simultaneously? Arink can. Air Inc. operates the largest commercial hangar in Oklahoma City. As an FAA Part 145 repair station, Air Inc.'s team delivers advanced special mission capabilities, reverse engineering of obsolete parts, along with aircraft modifications, avionics upgrades, systems integration, and more. Log on to ARINC.com to learn more.
You hear the sounds of hammers and saws, but it's also the sound of freedom and independence. Across America, people are supporting Homes for Our Troops build specially adapted homes for our severely injured veterans. Now, it's your turn to help Sergeant Stephen Kiernan, who lost both legs while serving in Iraq. He volunteered to protect our freedom. You can volunteer your time, donate materials, or make a cash donation to this effort. Visit homesforourtroops.org or call 866-7-TROOPS.
Join AGA for its National Leadership Conference, February 17th and 18th at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA will bring together government, financial, management, and accountability leaders to share valuable insight, proven strategies, lessons learned. Sessions over current issues relating to the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the effects of political transitions, and what the future holds. Show your commitment to a more accountable future. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Ted Davies of Unisys, my guest for the hour on Industry Chatter. And we talked a little bit at the beginning of the show, Ted, about cybersecurity and some of the things that your company's doing in that space. One of the challenges for agencies, especially when it comes to educating their non-IT people about what they're doing and what the end user should be doing when it comes to keeping the network clean, the network hygiene. I always get a weird picture in my head when I think about network hygiene, but that's another story. The concept of making sure everybody understands what needs to happen is difficult, I think, because there's nothing tangible. I use the example off the air of when you have a mouse, you get a mouse trap, you can see the mouse trap, you put it down, and you know when you've got the end result that you want. Cybersecurity is not like that, obviously. Demonstrating that your network is safe, or knowing even in your own mind that your network is safe, is much more tricky than that. What are the people that are successful at it doing to stay successful at it?
Well, I like your analogy with a mousetrap. It's difficult to know when you've got the mouse in this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody ever feels like they fully do have the mouse caught. Quite frankly, there's millions of mice, and they're always kind of nipping to get in. And so I think agencies are recognizing that you're going to get hit, and it's not so much are you, it's where and how bad. So I think a lot of organizations are really looking hard at how do you monitor things. And how do you identify which threats are the most damaging? Are you getting them from repeatedly from one place? And reacting quickly. I think it's a game of reacting quickly as much as anything else at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a constant and evolving threat. And there's not, obviously, if there was one easy answer, it would have been put in place
sure.
already.
Yeah. Talk about what you're seeing at the agencies as far as their posture goes when it comes to cybersecurity. Are we past the... Well, I shouldn't say past, because the bad guys are really sophisticated and really good, and they're going to get into these networks from time to time. But are we past only the emergency response, the incident response, where that's the only focus mm-hmm. of cybersecurity efforts, and into the risk mitigation and threat reduction phase of this?
I think we never really passed that part. You know, we as an organization, and then all federal agencies, are putting more and more tools in place to get to the different vulnerabilities. And so I think people are going to continue to deploy tools, and when something gets broken, they're going to implement new tools. So I think that it's going to be a constant process.
Mm-hmm.
But we also discussed earlier the need for improved training of the people that are involved, and making sure that the policies and procedures are clear
mm-hmm.
so that people don't make mistakes and thumb drives or access to different sites, et cetera. So this is just a constant process. The only other point I would make here is that there's a lot more integration, I think, of physical and IT security. And that's a lot of what we're doing at Unisys today, is around biometrics and integrating physical security and IT security, because I think the combination is what gives you better protection than either one individually.
I had a great conversation not too long ago with Mark Cohn of Unisys about personal identity and identity assurance, and we could go do probably a whole nother hour on that.
Mark can do an hour on that easily.
That's right, and I'll look forward to doing that with him again at some point. The idea that I just wonder sometimes when we've done as much training as we should have to do, and maybe that's not the right way to look at the whole issue, because as long as people are still putting thumb drives into systems that they shouldn't, maybe even though some people think it's enough or too much, it hasn't been. I don't know.
I think it's constant education as much as training.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've found with workforces is that, and people, that they're inherently want to do the right thing. I think oftentimes things change so fast they're not even sure they're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And so just the constant education as to what you should and shouldn't do, and how the bad effects can happen is important.